All right, so I'm not quite certain if this is the saying, but I believe I've heard this before, that your friends will keep you grounded, something along that line,
yeah,
right?
I'm
sure
so,
we've
yeah.
all heard that kind of saying before, and today is a perfect example of that because I am feeling very good. I am on cloud nine. I played golf today, and I think I need to shut down my golf season after today because I shot the best score I have ever shot before. Dave Poulin's in here. Poulin, you'd appreciate that. Noodles, you have no interest, and it really will not affect your life whatsoever.
No, but I want to just tell me it's something with a seven in it, and I will be so proud as punch.
76, the best
wow.
round of golf I've ever played in my life. And the reason I bring up that saying that I may have butchered, I probably did, was I played with the grappler today. So I'm out there, and the grappler was chopping it around. It wasn't the greatest round of golf he's played, but he played pretty well. But he was a witness. He watched me, played very well, birdied
wow.
18. I'm on cloud nine. I mean, I am moon dancing off the 18th green and thinking I might retire now and just play again next spring because it's only going to go downhill from here. And so I'm in my
wow.
car. I head home feeling good. And then I open the old Twitter machine up, and the grapplers posted how it started, how it's going
I
pictures.
I saw that. Did you sign off on that?
Technically, I did, but he took advantage of the
that
goodwill
is...
and the feeling of just
like
elation and jubilation that I've been going through over the past 3 or 4 hours since shooting 76 earlier today.
I got to be honest, Pooley, you got to weigh in on this. But when I saw that, I thought that O got the password to Overdrive and hacked it and put that up there because he loves that picture. You know that. That is his... That's his go-to when he's making fun of you. He'll say, you know, take us back to that day where you were wearing the tarp.
Yep.
And that's – but I. Secondly, I'd like to jump on this as well because you talk about friends keeping you grounded. So I'm going to ask a Jeff O'Neill question for your golf game. Was there any fluffing from the rough?
Nothing. Noodles, I didn't even take a breakfast ball. I used
didn't touch the ball the whole round.
Well, it was wet out there, Pooley.
Okay.
So
okay, so
you know,
so,
there were
so ball in hand,
the ball up,
clean
absolutely.
In place.
Yep, yep.
But clean
and
in place is played on the PGA Tour in certain events.
That's right. Oh, totally legitimate. I mean, it was pouring
clean
overnight.
Clean in place.
Absolutely. Clean in place.
So big wad of mud on the ball, pick it up, clean it, put it down in a really nice place. Just in the fairway, though.
Just in the fairway. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Only in the fairway. And I'm telling you, man, this was I have witnesses. Like, this is not something I'm just going to, you know, throw out there without people being able to back it up.
I think if I were you, Brian, I would pack it in for the year. Although, Friday's supposed to be, like, 21 and sunny. Like, there's going to be really nice days, so you got a decision to make. You can ride the laurels of that game the entire winter with only good thoughts about golf.
Yeah.
And you know
and
I'm not going to do that, Pooley. I'm going to shoot 97.
Tempting.
I'm going to play later in the week. I'll shoot 97, and then I'll never play again after that. I'll hate golf for the next 4 months while I don't play.
Don't play because you know you're right. Like, be Costanza. Go out on a high. Like, right now, you're on a high. You can get up and leave the room, and your golf game is at a peak. The minute you start, you tee it up on Friday, you are going to shoot a 90. 97, 95, whatever. It's going to go south, and you're going to break a club, and you're going to say, why the hell did I go out?
100%.
So when you saw that picture today, when you were Harry Higgs, right? when you were.
Harry Higgs.
Did you have more girth, like, behind the ball? Did you hit it further? Did you have the strut like he has? When Harry's strolling down the course, there's no one like it. Like, he has a walk. Like, I own this golf course. Did you have the Harry Higgs strut
I had the opposite. I had the opposite. I looked like Harry Higgs, and I played like garbage. You know, I don't know what the comparison is. But
you said you were a good golfer when you were younger.
Oh, I could play. Like, it was – I should say I was garbage, but I didn't get any improvement. I wasn't playing from the tips because I was tipping the scales at 270.
Right.
You know, I was not getting any extra yardage. I just – It didn't benefit my game whatsoever.
You just
I don't think the grappler should take you down a notch like that. I don't think that's fair on a day like this.
I agree.
I think
it's a gutless post, and I really do. Like, I just disagree with it. If you signed off, and I will say this, in the Grappler's defense, there's things where he'll go to post and he gives us like that, hey, is this all right?
Which he did. Yes,
yeah,
he did.
Like it's not, you know, and you're on cloud nine, you're like, out of hell with it, let's have some fun today. But I still think in the big scheme of things, it's a gutless post because, you know, that is... Is that picture 10 years ago? That you and I were like, that's a day one-er, I believe.
That's a day one. That's remember the studio down on Queen. Like, that's that's downtown.
Day one-er of Leafs lunch.
That was Blue Lunch.
That was before that.
Blue
that was
lunch.
The Brian Hayes show. That was day one of TSN radio. That was a long time ago. And this is – we bring this picture up, and there are a few pictures online that I would prefer to blast into the universe with on a one-way ticket, never coming home again. But they're out there, and we have fun with it, and it's all good, and I don't care.
Now, did you okay the picture or a picture?
No, that was already...
It was a sort of generic discussion. I'm going to post a then and now picture, but it's going to be the picture.
No, it was sent to me the way it was posted. He said, this is going up. Are you okay with it?
You signed off on it.
And I signed off on it. Oh, absolutely. It's not the Grappler's problem.
Then you started thinking about it?
Well, put it this way, Pooley. If I shot 97 today, he'd never have the stones to ask me. Because I'd say, Grappler, if I ever hear from you again.
Oh, so he got you at a high moment.
Yeah, exactly.
He got you when you were weak.
Yeah, that's right, what I'm telling you, Pooley. That's what I'm telling you. I walked off that course around 12:45 today, and he called me at like 1:30, 2 o'clock, and said, do you mind? And I said, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm feeling good, whatever. We'll have some fun. And, of course, the engagement. This is going to break the internet. This is like a Kardashian post or a Bieber post. There's just a million people commenting and tweeting and retweeting and liking. Yeah. But it's
I
just
like
one of the worst picks ever because the shirt, that's a day one shirt. Like that shirt is awful. Horrible.
You still have
that
it?
Awful. No, I
it
don't.
Looked like it was a sponsorship deal. That's why you were wearing that shirt.
Yeah.
Am I correct
yeah.
about that? Do you have a sponsorship deal for that shirt company?
I was a nobody back then, Pooley. I'm still not really a somebody, but I was less than a nobody back then. That was day
Close
one.
Close contract?
Midday. No, nothing. Nothing. Yeah. That was a – I'm
Hair
running
contract?
Out to Walmart the night before
getting
a bed sheet and putting a collar on it.
I just think – I honestly, we should have a poll – because I think it's a gutless post, and who should say, is it a gutless post, yes or no?
Thank
because
you,
I like I just, I mean, as much of fun as we're having with it, and I know mine's coming, because the other day, I don't know what was trending online, but it seemed like maybe a Roman Catholic, was that the Pope holding something up? And then
I don't know how that started. But
it had a picture of like, in the... jersey
pool.
On and pool, right? So
right.
And I was laughing because there were some really creative things online, and I don't know what the Pope was doing or whatever that post was, but it had O-Dog in there and now the gutless post on you. So what's the I mean one is
You're
coming for me mine
you
is
all,
next
it's I, in the chamber I guarantee it,
it's I guarantee you know what it is, it's going to be the hole in my head. That's what it's going to be, because the Grappler has the picture I sent him of the, you know, the divot missing in the back.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually,
but there's some
that's
good mullet
come.
Pictures of you too, Jamie.
Yeah,
some,
but I'm yeah,
some
I'm
really
not.
Good mullet pictures.
Exactly,
but you're proud
and
of those. You like those.
There is a picture out there. I may allow this to be released because we are coming up on Movember. Long before, I want to say long before, but this was in 2004. We had a pretty tight team, and we were dinking around one night at kind of the party house and having a few drinks. And we kind of needed something, and we all decided to grow mustaches. And mine did not go so well. And I kind of had long hair, and it just – I looked like an exchange student. I guess that's the
a
only thing I can say.
Just
yeah, I was. It was tough, but there were some fantastic pictures, and all the guys on the team did it. Like a guy named Rhett Warner had like a Lanny McDonald one, and you know, guys like Stefan Yale that were able to grow one in like 2 days. I struggled for like 3 weeks to get it. I still have the picture. It's tough. I'll put it in the internal text here, and you guys let me know what
well,
you believe. Like it's
the
tough.
Grappler, man. The Grappler, believe me, he's probably already found it. He's probably hacked into your database. He's got it. He's got something waiting, and it's lurking, and he's going to take advantage. You're going to have a great day. Something's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're feeling. You're on cloud nine. Like, there'll be a vaccine. Yeah. You're going to get vaccinated, and then the Grappler
exactly.
will be like, by the way, I'm posting this so that people can just,
So
you know,
how
roast
good was
you.
Your day, Brian? Did you look at it briefly and say, I shot 76. I don't care, man.
No,
I knew it,
Pooley. You know it.
You're still in the picture.
Yeah.
Were you just happy with the golf game? Forget the picture. Seriously.
The pictures. What do I care about that? I mean, the golf, that's the best I've ever played.
76. That's big time.
38-38, birdied 18, totally legit. Same ball the whole round. Not that that matters. But little stuff like that. Golfers that are mid-handicappers, which is what I am, you just know it, right, Pooley? You know it when you're feeling it, you're connecting it, and
it's a great feeling.
You're rolling putts. It is a great feeling. And, you know, you mentioned –
would it have been better had you done it with a certain person that's normally on this panel?
No, because –
would he have talked you out of it?
O would have disputed it or said, I saw you do something that I didn't do, and he wouldn't give me credit for it.
Well, you know what the thing is, Brian?
Yeah.
All I can think about is when you said you played well. I have to be honest, and tell me if I'm wrong. You played with the grappler, and you know I'm sure you had like some great laughs, and I'm sure you have great laughs with O. But because O's so good, there might be a layer of intimidation. You may not have shot 76 if O was playing, because you know you would have. He would have given you the horse eye or the head shake at some point over 18 holes that may have rattled your cage.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Oh, I know. I can tell you from experience, Noodles, that is exactly what has happened on multiple occasions. Now, that's not his fault necessarily.
No.
That's my own. But that's precisely what happens.
It's your fault that you let it affect you.
Right.
Absolutely. I should be able to grow past that and move past it. But I have been chopping it around golf courses with him, and he'll give you the just, you know, maybe pick it up and I'll see you on the next tee. And you're like,
yeah, he's very patient. He's very, very patient on the course.
Well, maybe when you're playing with him, Pooley. But, so anyway, that was, you know, that's how my day started. And now we're off and rolling. And you mentioned a moment ago, like, you know, a tight-knit team back in 04. Did anyone call up a media member and start roasting the coaching staff off the record? Or is that exclusively a Dallas Cowboys story? This is getting so greasy because they got smoked last night, like destroyed. And
that
a lot of it was self-destructive, right? The Cowboys are awful. They are horrendous. Yet still, they're first place in the NFC East, which is just a shocking stat. I read
that
last
night. With their two wins.
They are 2-4. First time since the merger in 1970 – through 6 weeks, a team is leading a division with a losing record.
And they're lucky to be 2-4, guys. Like, they came back in the game that Dak got
one
hurt.
Game,
That's right.
So
and
they,
against
they
Atlanta. Have... Remember, they were down big against Atlanta, and they stormed back and barely won that game.
Yeah.
They should be 1-5, if not 0-5. And they're a mess. They're awful. Someone's going to win that division by default. But they played so poorly last night, and they do look like they lack preparation. They look like they lack professionalism. But this is where it starts to take it to a new level of just disruption, of drama, and dysfunction, quite frankly. Because Jane Slater, who's really tapped in, she's a Cowboys reporter down in Dallas, caught up with multiple members of the team who spoke anonymously, but I guess technically on the record because she posted the quotes. And they're just roasting the coaching staff, saying that the coaches don't prepare properly, that they don't teach anything, they can't learn or adjust on the fly. One player just came out and said, bluntly, they're bad at their jobs. Like, this is Mike McCarthy, who has won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And has been around for quite some time, and a fairly veteran staff in terms of coordinators and the rest of the lot.
And Brian, is part of that staff a carryover from Jason Garrett?
I believe there is some carryover.
Or did he bring a whole new staff? Or has he got some new guys in there?
I think it's a combination of both. But, I mean, you're talking about the head coach. Like, you know the way football works. It starts at the top. McCarthy is in charge of everything. Everyone else is his lieutenant, so to speak. So, really, this is directed at the new coach who's been here for 6 weeks, who, albeit has not looked good, did not look good at the end of his reign in Green Bay. It got ugly for him. It got stale. But he didn't fumble two balls last night like Ezekiel Elliott did. That's not his fault.
No, exactly.
That's on Zeke.
Well,
Zeke's
the
pro,
finger pointing there. You know, the biggest word for me, and you know, when I watch a ton of college football when I was coaching college hockey, and the word that comes to mind is organized. In some games, different coaches, you'd see a team and it would be totally disorganized. Like, guys would be popping up for illegal procedure, offside, too many men on the field, you know, all kinds of things that to me would point right to the coach and say, man, they look disorganized. And they looked disorganized. Like when they're confused, they look disorganized. And that, to me, has to be on the head coach, because he's got to hammer every one of his individual assistants to get their unit organized.
But isn't that the most, Cooley and Hayes, we've talked about this too, isn't that the most embarrassing or indicting thing to a coach? When somebody is like, your group is looks disorganized. Like that
biggest
almost
insult you can give a guy.
Exactly. Like flat out, like they were not prepared. They did not look prepared. And I know some coaches come out and, you know, in a blowout game and they'll say, that's on me. I got to get the group going and that. And we all know that's just BS. But if you watch a team underperform or go out and just fumbling around, whether it's on the ice, on the field, or, you know, anywhere, and somebody says that team just looks disorganized, that's a complete indictment of the coaching staff.
100%.
No question. No question.
The coach deserves a ton of heat. A ton of heat. But the players are horrible also.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, they look awful.
They didn't just turn horrible. Like,
okay,
they're NFL players.
That's fine, Pooley. But again, like, Zeke fumbles two balls last night. It is inexcusable to fumble one ball when you are an all-pro running back that gets paid.
And they both lead to touchdowns.
And they both led to touchdowns. And they were both, like, bad fumbles that he needs
and
to be better
game
on.
Over.
That has nothing to do with Mike McCarthy. Nothing to do with Mike McCarthy. That is Ezekiel Elliott not being prepared and not having the mental fortitude to fight through some adversity. And maybe he's acting like a suck because Dak's not around and he doesn't think they can win or whatever. Mike McCarthy and that staff deserve all the licks that they're going to get. But you know who actually should be happy about this, that these comments are coming out about the coach as opposed to the GM or the owner, is Jerry Jones.
Who is this one and the same.
Exactly. It's the only guy in pro sports where it's one and the same. He's the GM and the owner. He is a disaster, and he has been for a long time. He's been riding those three Super Bowls from the 90s, which clearly were all about Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson put that team together. He grew that team. And then Switzer came in, and he kind of won with Jimmy's team, so to speak. Other years, they've had decent years. You know, they've had some winning years, and the Romo years were okay, and there's been some decent years in Dallas. But Jerry Jones doesn't have a clue what he's doing, and he's not going to snap out of it now. Like, he's not all of a sudden going to become a football, you know, savant and start putting together the proper pieces. I mean, that defense is atrocious.
Yeah.
And what did they do?
Absolute hand-picked head coach was Jason Garrett all the way along.
Yes.
And how many chances did he have?
And 9 years he was there, I believe.
Like, phenomenal amount of chances. And stuck with them and was patient and got them new players. But now they look disorganized, to use Jamie's word, as the ultimate insult to a coach.
Well, it is. But, Brian, like, McCarthy's a good coach, is he not? Like, that's the thing. Like,
He had a very good run. At the end, it got ugly in Green Bay. It did. It got stale. It got predictable.
But every coach runs his term.
Absolutely. Yeah. But for the most part, it never felt like it was out of control. It didn't feel like it was a soap opera, right? So this is surprising that this early on, the inmates are running the asylum and starting to, you know, really pop off. And especially when you consider, you're 2-4, but you're leading your division. Like, you can still get this on the rails. This would suggest the players don't really have any interest in doing that. And, you know, it's too bad, because what we should be talking about today is Kyler Murray and how entertaining he is to watch play.
He is fun to watch. Man, oh, man, he's fun to watch.
Isn't it incredible, the young quarterbacks in this league?
Yeah.
With Mahomes, who put on a bit of a clinic yesterday. They ran the ball. It was ugly conditions. Kansas City laid a bit of a beating on Buffalo, and that's a concern. We'll get to that momentarily. But you got Mahomes, Jackson, Murray. They're all under the age of 25.
And now you got another guy going to start in Miami. And how do you think that's a result of watching last night and watching Kyler and saying, we got to get our guy in there?
That's a good point. Tua
Tagovailoa. They watched the game last night and said, hey, Ryan, thanks a lot for coming around. You got us to 3-3, but you're out now.
Yeah.
Tua's in.
I like this move for a number of different reasons. Clearly, it was the plan before the year, right? Like, it's not a coincidence that Miami is on a bye this week. So you give them 2 weeks to prepare, 2 weeks to get kind of mentally set. You're the man now. They're 3-3, which I'm not sure they thought they would be. they have a chance to win that division now with Buffalo dropping two games in a row, or at least being
Brian
a wild card team.
Fitzpatrick's 70% completion average.
He has been lights out. But I think this is more
terrific.
I think this is more about next year, and I think this
sure
is about Miami realizing, okay, we're maybe a little bit ahead of the curve here. They have really turned over a lot. They got picks still coming. They have the first and second round pick of Houston in this upcoming draft from the Tunsil deal last year, not to mention their own draft picks. So they're going to have that much more of an infusion of talent coming in next year. And I think this is a really brilliant big picture move where you may take a step back, right? Like you just said, Fitzpatrick has been outstanding. He's making the throws.
He's been terrific.
They're winning the game.
He started every year like this for the last few years. That's
exactly
what he does. Right?
And the trends would suggest he's going to fade likely over time, although he finished very strong last year. But I think they're looking at this thinking, we get to win now, we go through the bumps, and we still have a shot at maybe making the playoffs, which would be incredible for his experience. But next year, they might be one of the truly best teams in the NFL. Like, if he gets the experience, gets through the grind, and then shows up and is prepared to take off and play like Kyler Murray, man, the Dolphins have a ton of talent. Like, they could be really, really
good.
Could
be fun to watch.
Yeah. Really fun to watch. So, Bobby Carpenter's coming up from ESPN. We'll get his take on the Cowboys stuff, on Tua going in, on the Bills. Are they in, you know, they're not in trouble. They're 4-2, but
they lost to a couple pretty good teams.
Yeah. And pretty handedly, too, though, Pooley. You know, it's it's not only who you lose to, but how did you lose to those teams. And Kansas City kind of threw a different game plan at them last night and still dismantled the Bills. It wasn't a great look for them.
Probably a good measuring stick of where you really think you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Against top-tier teams.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what Bobby can tell us about that. Ray Ferraro coming up. The Chicago Blackhawks kind of going down the path of the New York Rangers from a couple years ago. But also,
we're going to talk about the Rangers at some point because, to me, they handled that masterfully. That letter was only in 2018.
Yeah, that's wild.
That was only a year and a half ago.
2 years. And since then, a second overall pick and a first overall pick. Panarin signs.
Yeah.
Shesterkin shows up.
True
Adam
betrayal.
That's a pretty quick reaction off a letter, let me tell you. That looks brilliant now.
And Chicago's trying to go down the same path, but the difference is, you know, New York didn't have Seabrook, Keith, Taves, Kane sitting around. So we'll tell you about that later in the hour. We'll get into it a little bit more. With Dave Pullen, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Ray's coming up just after 5. Marcellus Wiley in about an hour. Game 1 of the World Series tonight. I'm getting nervous for Kershaw. I have no connection to him, no connection to the Dodgers. I really don't care who wins the World Series. But I just want to see him perform well. And, again, even if they lose, if he can get out of here and pitch well tonight and pitch well later in the series, then maybe we start focusing on that regular season again. But it's a chance for redemption for Kershaw. We'll get into that with Nick Swisher later in the afternoon. But here's former NFL or ESPN NFL analyst, Bobby Carpenter. What's happening, Bobby?
Not too much, man. Just trying to, enjoy Tuesday after another Monday night doubleheader, which have been pretty nice lately.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I mean, this has been great all year, and I know it's not going to be a part of the plan in the future and likely won't change, and I'm sure ESPN has no interest in sharing the marquee. But, I mean, that game yesterday, we were more focused on the Bills game and two quality teams in the AFC, and Kansas City just ran all over them, like quite literally ran all over them. And that's two bad losses in 2 weeks for the Bills. You know, are they showing cracks, or what do you think the situation is here with Buffalo?
Well, they played against two pretty quality teams, especially you look at Kansas City, what they've been able to do. I mean, I think that Buffalo, they tried to do what, you know, Oakland, or rather Las Vegas, and what New England did to them is, hey, we're going to play soft coverage over the top. We're going to try to double Tyreek Hill when we can. And we're going to double Travis Kelce and force the other guys to beat us. And historically, that's always worked against Andy Reid. You know, my time in Dallas, we played Andy, I played him 9 times in 4 years. Pretty sure I think I played him once more at Detroit than we played him in the preseason with New England. And the MO on Andy Reid is always, no matter how good they are, whether they have, Brian Westbrook or Sean McCoy, whoever it might be, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, now is, hey, if you stop the run early, he's a guy that wants to throw the ball. So don't give him a reason to run it anymore. So as long as you stuff it early, he's going to throw it 70% of the time. And that's what he's been doing historically, and that's what he's done at Kansas City. And last night he said, hey, you know, we worked running early. I'm starting to look at these coverages we're getting. You know, they're kind of rushing Mahomes and keeping him contained and just forcing him to try to find something, and there hasn't been anything there. And so I give Andy Reid credit. He looked at the situation. He did something that he probably had to hold his nose a little bit with and just say, hey, we're going to try to run the ball 45 times.
Well, and it worked. And Le'Veon Bell is going to join that backfield at some point soon, but I don't see how Edwards-Helaire, you know, gets shifted away from that number one running back on the depth chart. I mean, how do you keep him out of the lineup? How do you avoid giving him, you know, 15, 20 touches a game, even with Le'Veon Bell there?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because, you know, Edwards-Helaire had a great opening game, and then he struggled for about 4 or 5 weeks. Now, last night he looked really good again. You know, I guess so. You know, the question becomes, you know, was that a product of, you know, great offensive line play and maybe, you know, the type of defense that you're playing against and what they were doing coverage-wise to maybe allow you to run the ball a little bit better? But I know Andy Reid, like, they're interested in winning. I think Le'Veon Bell probably gives them a little bit more of a power attack that they didn't have, and they're both really versatile backs and can get out of the backfield and obviously catch the ball. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them both on the field at times. Like, they have a ton of weapons. Andy Reid is an incredibly creative coach, and Le'Veon Bell is a guy that can line up in the slot and do some stuff there. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if you see Le'Veon Bell in maybe some non-traditional running back roles to allow them to fully utilize his skill set, something that, you know, Adam Gase, for the life of him, had no interest or didn't know how to do when he was with the Jets.
We have former NFLer, ESPN NFL analyst Bobby Carpenter. You mentioned your time with the Cowboys, and I'm sure it was drama down there. It was a soap opera. It always is with that team and that market with that owner. But it's taken a turn for the worse, man. It's getting dark down in Dallas. Like, they got blown up last night, and now you've got players speaking to the media anonymously, but just carving up the coaching staff, saying things like they don't know what they're doing, they're just bad at their jobs. It's ugly for a 2-4 team that shockingly is actually leading their division. It feels like it's starting to really even get further away from them. What's your read on the Cowboys and how ugly might this get down in Dallas?
Well, you know, it's a soap opera when it's going well. It's more like a horror film when it's going bad. And right now it's going bad. And despite their best efforts to give away the division, like you said, they're still sitting there 2-4 and in the lead due to the ineptitude of the other teams in there. You know, if you didn't have players starting to speak out, I wouldn't think it was that big of an issue. I mean, obviously they've had massive injuries up front. You know, if you look at their offensive line to finish last year to the five offensive linemen that are playing now, there's only one guy that is, you know, was carried over after Martin got hurt last night. So, you know, they definitely have some issues there. Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins out. I mean, those are Pro Bowl players, and some of them have been, you know, some of the best. You know, Tyron Smith, you could say, was in the conversation for best tackle the last, you know, 7, 8, 9 years. So those things are going to impact you. I guess the thing that's really concerning, you know, outside of Zeke's turnovers last night, is that it just didn't look like they had any, you know, coherent plan offensively, what they're trying to do. And, you know, Mike McCarthy, you know, I think sometimes when he was, you know, in Green Bay, especially towards the end of his tenure, they lacked creativity some, and there really wasn't a sense that he really governed the team all that well and just kind of focused on the offense. And I think some of those things are starting to show their ugly side again, where, you know, maybe that's some of the stuff that he's focused on, and maybe some of those things were covered up by the fact that he had Brett Favre for, you know, a handful of years, and then Aaron Rodgers for, you know, really the entirety of his prime. And some may make up for maybe a lack of creativity at certain points in time. So we'll see what they do this week. I know it's obviously a rough one last week, but, you know, I think they have Washington coming up in New York. I mean, they've got some very winnable games. And if they can't at least get a split from those two, like, it's going to be really rough. And it wouldn't surprise me if Mike McCarthy maybe makes a coaching change, something that I don't think he really wants to do, but I don't know if he has any other avenues at this point.
Bobby, you've been in a lot of locker rooms, and you know, I think one of the worst things a coach can hear is that his team looks disorganized. That team looked disorganized, but it's also up to somebody in the locker room, isn't it, to not let it get the players, you know, talking like that to a writer. Isn't somebody got to stand up and say, hey, boys, it's still on us at some point here?
Yeah, you know, usually that is the case, because like you said, coaches, like, this organization is kind of the table stakes to be in there. Like, you don't necessarily have to be, you know, the best coach in the world or the smartest guy in the world to be organized. You just have to have your crap together. And so you talk about you know, potentially, you know, guys standing up and making it and saying something and making a choice to say, we're not going to talk to the media and keep this internal. But part of the problem is, I mentioned the offensive line injuries, Tyron Smith, Dak Prescott is hurt. Like, a lot of young leaders and guys that are more veteran players, like, you know, they're injured. So it's tough for those guys to kind of talk and be a part of that. So I think you're probably starting to see a team that does lack a little bit of player leadership right now.
Are you all right with Tua being named the starter over Fitzpatrick, given how well he's played?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I believe when you win 3 of 4, like, I think in the quarterbacks, it's not in spite of the quarterback. I don't know if all the wins were because of him, but you know, he definitely was a part of it. Yeah, it was surprising to see them make that move because, you know, it's not like the season's lost. They're 3-3, and they're in the conversation in the AFC East, and maybe they think Tua. And here's, I guess, the one thing. Brian Flores was in New England when I was up there, and maybe they've seen enough of him in practice that they know, hey, we're still in this. We've given him really 6 weeks. He's healthy. He's fully ready to go, and we think he's the best guy moving forward. And if it's not completely obvious in practice, you might have a mutiny down there. So the fact that, you know, it's supportive, and we'll see how he obviously plays here over the next couple weeks. But players, man, when they sense that there's a chance to win and that you have a chance to win a division, especially one that's been owned by New England, if he couldn't do it, I mean, you'll start to hear some of the players maybe speaking out against that as well. So they must know something internally that the rest of us haven't seen yet.
Yep, that's a good point. It's going to be fun to see him in a couple of weeks and moving on beyond that. Great stuff as always. Thank you for doing this, Bobby.
Hey, my pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you.
Bobby Carpenter from ESPN. And that's a player that's been in the room, and he brings up a good point. Like, I think big picture, this is a smart move to go with Tua, let him sit behind Fitzpatrick, let him get a snap or two, and then go into the bye week and come back and see where you're going to take it. And I think it's more about next year in terms of his development. But the guys in the room, the other 52 guys on the roster, they don't care about next year. They think they can sniff out a playoff spot here.
Yeah, they'll be fine with it as long as he goes in and plays well. But the second he falters at all, they'll be looking down the bench at Fitzpatrick saying, okay, that guy was rolling along pretty well when this happened.
Absolutely. As they should, right?
Guys don't care. When they're playing in the middle of a season, guys don't care about the future. Like,
Who cares about the next game?
I never once during the season was like, oh, this guy coming up from the minors, you know, he's a really high prospect. I hope he gets all the experience that he needs, you know, this season so that next season or the following season he's going to be really good for this organization. The guy comes up and stinks. All he does is jam everyone up. And I'm not suggesting
that's
what
Tua's going to practice, do. But when he talked about practice, right, he said there's a chance this guy's looked really good in practice. Then the players start to look around and go, okay, we're rolling along with Fitzpatrick. How good is this kid going to be? Because you know the bottom line is if a guy can play, then everybody's fine with it. That's the bottom line.
Agreed.
Well, what's going to be intriguing this year in the NHL is with the hard salary cap and it not – moving, and it's likely not going to adjust for a number of years. My understanding is there may be some kids that almost have to play based on their cap hit. And like, what's the reaction going to be like around the league if some kid who's maybe not as good as the other guy, but the other guy's making a little bit too much money and they need to bury it? How does that work with this line of thinking? That you put
well, there's going to be a weeding out
team.
Yeah, there's going to be a weeding out process here, you know, to get those players because you've still got it's $1.75 million now to send them to the minors. Hypothetically, there might not be an American Hockey League to send them to. This is going to be a real challenge of managing the cap around. Is there going to be a taxi squad of three guys?
Well, that's what I was going to go. That's where I was going to head, Pooley, and get your thoughts on this too. Is you might be able to have a taxi squad and skirt around. For example, let's take the Leafs. There's a lot of players that they've got under contract, a lot of players that could probably be NHLers. If you could, you know, be cap compliant to start the season but have a taxi squad of the guys that you want to give experience to, the guys that, you know, are on the cusp anyways without sending them to the AHL. I mean, you know, there's an ongoing joke about the Marlies, how they travel with two buses and everything because they've got so many, you know, so much resources, right? I mean, Pooley, you would know a little bit more about the dynamic of that. But, you know, there's some financial means with the Marlies that other teams don't have. you could have that at the NHL level if you have a taxi squad, you know, and that comes back to, Brian, our conversation of like, well, if Spezza in the lineup every night, is Thornton going to be in the lineup? Or not even guys like that, but it's maybe the Joey Andersons, guys, you know.
And he's at 700 grand, I believe.
Exactly. Farther down in the lineup that you're like, oh, he's on the taxi squad. Perfect. We don't have to put him in the Marlies. You know, like, I think it'll be very fascinating when it comes to the National Hockey League, you know, if they continue to go. I still believe... I was talking to an executive last night that said January 1st, he believes is going to be a stretch, which kind of made me feel sad. But he was still confident that the league was going to go. He just said, I think it's just going to be pushed back a bit.
Yeah, so, like camps opening up maybe on Jan 1 or around.
Yeah,
then,
something like that. I don't know.
But
yeah.
What a challenge for that expanded roster, because are you given a certain dollar amount you're allowed to work with in that expanded roster? And when you talk about, there's three guys right now listed at 700 amongst their forwards. And you look at those three guys and say, okay, you can't even substitute Barabanov, who makes 9.25, for one of those guys, because you don't have the extra 2.25.
Right.
And this Mikhaev... Right. Arbitration is going to be everything, guys. It just is. It's,
I think so,
you know,
too.
They have to really, really hope this comes in at a favorable number for them.
Could you,
if
not,
he gets there?
I was just going to say, could you not be negotiating behind the scenes to make this number
right
work?
Up to you on the steps? But the minute it starts this year, Jamie, then you can't change it. Last year, you know, you could come out of the arbitration and say, well, okay, let's negotiate walking out on the steps. The minute you walk in and start, that's in. That's it.
Done. Okay.
You're locked
well,
in.
Yeah, if he gets anywhere close to $2 million, he's not getting 2.7. I think we all know that. And that's what he's filed for, and the Leafs have filed for $1 million. But if he's anywhere close to two, that is trouble.
If the arbitrator splits it, you're in trouble, Brian.
Yeah, you're probably right. Like 1.3, 1.4 is maybe too high, because Dermott's still got to come in, and Dermott's going to get like $1 million. I would think, but I don't think he's going to get
a one-way contract for one thing. I mean, that's, you know, you look at a couple of the Bruins just signed, that Carson Coleman just signed, and you know, he just got a one-way contract at like $7 and change.
Isn't that what guys are fighting? Isn't that what some guys are fighting for at that point, is to get on a one-way pulley like that? That's kind of get on a one-way contract. So you've got guaranteed money. That's all I can think of when, you know, I've heard of arbitration cases where you're like, that guy really doesn't have much of a case. Well, then you're thinking, okay, well, he wants to get a one-way. You know, that's part of the battle. So you're right. This Mikhaev one could be interesting. I don't know if there's a ton of runway for his career, sample size.
There isn't. He hasn't even played 40 games.
I know,
no,
but that's
not.
But
that's,
you know,
why it's scary, too.
Exactly. You get an arbitrator who doesn't care about the Toronto Maple Leafs as a fan or a fan base,
which
or
is,
anything.
He better not. I mean, it better not be Joe from the Bridge, or the NHL is going to have to explain themselves.
Well, I'll tell you what. We were laughing last night because when we were doing That's Hockey and Gino put up the roster and Mikhaev was in the top six, I'm like, boy, they're taking that into arbitration if they're going,
oh,
he's
yeah.
a top six
Mikhaev
player on the
be.
Leafs.
Yeah, the Leafs would be like, we see him maybe starting with the Marlies, and he's awful and brutal. And
Joe from the Bridge puts him in the top six hole on the left side
right.
because he's a super fan and wants him to play with.
He probably did the grid last night too, Jamie.
He probably did. Unbeknownst to Joe from the Bridge, just jamming up his favorite team.
Working for arbitrators.
Yeah, just helping out the dark
side.
But we'll come back and discuss that a little bit more. We'll tell you about this Chicago Blackhawk letter to the fans. And I guess they're trying to be transparent, but how's it going to work out with the vets? I mean, we're talking Hall of Fame players who are still kicking around on that team.
Yeah.
We'll get to that more next. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up. Marcellus Wiley later in the afternoon. Nick Swisher as well, longtime MLB-er, World Series champ with the Yanks. Fox analyst teeing up the World Series tonight. So the trend, I guess it's a trend now that we have a second team, began a couple of years ago when the New York Rangers issued a statement to their fans. They posted a letter, and it was a message saying, we're rebuilding, we're reloading, retooling. It's going to take some time, some patience. We love you. Hopefully you love us back, blah, blah, blah. And I would say they've done a pretty good job, because since then they've turned over the roster. They've added a lot of talent. They've gotten lucky. They've won a couple of lotteries. Taking Kako second overall last year and Lafreniere this year first overall, which is certainly going to help with the process. But now the Chicago Blackhawks have jumped on board, and they have had, I think, a confusing offseason, because they let Corey Crawford go I think they got the worst tandem in the NHL right now, don't they, Noodles? Like, is there maybe there's a couple of teams that are worse, but it's pretty thin.
Subban and Colin Delia, I would say it's quite thin. I would say right at right hovering near the bottom. Absolutely.
Okay. Yep. So that's where they're at. And they issued a statement saying, we've let some guys go. Brandon Saad, Corey Crawford, couple of cup winners here, fan favorites, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to try to develop our young players and rebuild. And we don't just want a window. We want to reach the summit and stay there. And as a result, there's going to be some learning curves. And maybe we're going to miss here or there, but we're going to keep everything up on the up and up and keep everything honest.
Yeah, transparent.
Yeah. Transparent, et cetera, et cetera. So basically what they're saying is we're not that good right now. We're probably not going to be that good again for another year or two. We might even take a step back. And yet all you can think of, or all I can think of, is, wait a minute, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, and I presume a returning and healthy Brent Seabrook are still on the roster.
Right.
So how is this going to work? How do you retool, rebuild with those four, stalemates on your team, four guys who may have their jerseys retired and statues outside the building someday?
Well,
how do you do this?
Pooley, I'll let you weigh in. I just saw Keith has 3 years left on his deal at 5.5. Like, didn't he sign 12 years? Wasn't
it?
13 years.
13 years, and it was at 5 million or just over 5. It's at 5.5. It's crazy. I still feel like he's a bargain. I don't know why. I mean, he looked like he turned the clock back in the bubble. He was fantastic. I still think because he's such a great skater, like, there's some value there with him. Seabrook's the one that has had the big drop-off. He's a bigger body. The speed has caught up to him. And the injury bug. And then, the other two, Patrick Kane, is he always near the top for you, Brian, as far as one of the best?
He's still a top 15 or 20 player in the world for me.
Well, Toews had one of his best years last year.
I know,
though.
And they're both 31 and 32 years old. So, the top two, Kane and Toews, are making 10.5. That's, it's a big number. And if they decide, if they walk into Stan Bowman's office and go, I'm not going through this, like, who could take on that deal?
Well, I think Chicago management would love them to. And there's a significant factor here in that their president, John McDonough, stepped down this year.
Yeah.
And so right now it's an interim president there, Danny Wirtz, I believe, right? Who's the son of Rocky?
Is
that correct?
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah,
and so he's come over from the business side. So John McDonough was an interesting guy because he drove a lot of what happened there when he came in 2008, maybe. And that was that when everything changed around in Chicago, 2008, 2009, when the big push started. And yes, the good players landed, but the way he handled everything, he came over from the Cubs. And I'm not sure that he would agree to this, and that's why it didn't happen under his reign. But the problem with those two guys, Kane and Toews, is they won so young, and they won three championships together. And the way that they won, there's no team that's been broken up as much as that 2010 Blackhawks team. I mean, the day they were done, they were moving Bufflin and Ladd and Versteeg and just so many guys out the door.
Right.
And to me, it's quite amazing that they won three times in 6 years. I mean, it just is. That you can, because those are three different teams they won with. And yes, the stars were the same. And now you're 5 years past their last cup, going on 6 years past their last cup. I think they would love either one of those guys to walk in and say, hey, I don't want to be a part of this. I want to get out, because they have no choice.
That's what it feels like to me also, Paul.
It does.
Like, this is a message to those guys. Like, okay, you're under contract and you're here, but we're not going to show the same urgency that the Pittsburgh Penguins do every single year to continue to give you an opportunity to win in your prime. Like, in Pittsburgh, we will trade every pick, every prospect. We got to get this done because Sid and Gino are still rock stars, and they might not be in 2 or 3 years. This is Chicago essentially saying, our priority is not Toews, Kane, Keith, Seabrook.
Right.
It's, the kids. It's our draft picks in the future. It's development. And I would read that as, if I want to win, I got to get out. Like, if I'm Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane, now maybe they've won enough. Maybe they love Chicago enough that they're like, listen, we'll grind. you know, and they're not alone. LA's going through the same thing. Kopitar and Doughty are going through the same thing. There's no letter, but it's the same thing. And Jonathan Quick.
Carter's still there.
Jeff Carter's still there. It's the same thing, right? We were at the top, and now we've been awful, and we need to reload, and who knows when the clock is going to strike midnight for us and we get rocking again.
Yeah.
But those three or four players in LA, I think you're going to chew on it and continue to grow. I'm curious to see what happens with these Chicago guys. But Taves does not seem like he's interested in losing.
No.
No, and Carter and Dustin Brown have 2 years left.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. The New York Rangers sent the letter out, Brian. They didn't even win anything.
Right. They never won a cup.
They sent a letter.
Yeah.
No. We're going to rebuild.
Right.
From what?
Yeah. And the Leafs didn't send out a letter, but the Leafs, you know, Babcock gave it the it's Payne's coming and all that.
Yeah.
And that was the equivalent of a letter. But the Leafs were in the same spot. They hadn't won anything. And everyone knew that they were bottoming out. And there weren't many holdovers. There weren't any holdovers that had the same pedigree that Taves, Kane, Kopitar, Doughty, Keith have. We'll pick up on this with Ray in about 10 minutes. Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, coming up. Marcellus Wiley at 5:30. Nick Swisher on the World Series in the 6 p.m. hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.